This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to talk about race communism. We're going to talk about resisting it. Liz Wheeler's going to talk to us about the nuclear family. Jeffrey Tucker educates us on the Federal Reserve. What a show tonight on I'm Right. Before we get into the rest of the show, I just wanted to say a prayer for the Kirk family. As you're well aware, Charlie Kirk got shot earlier today. Unbelievable madness, unbelievable violence out there. And there was a family in desperate need of your prayers. So prayers for Charlie, prayers for his family. Let's talk about race communism in the wake of this horrible, horrible murder that we've all been talking about, dwelling on, angry about all week. Young Ukrainian woman on a train gets slaughtered by some savage who should have been locked in a cage a long time ago. And of course, when he got up, audio is a little rough, but you can hear it. After he had gotten done shoving a knife into her throat three times, he got up and he said this. So let's talk. Let's have an honest, possibly offensive talk about why there are so many of these stories where you have a black criminal attacking a white person, oftentimes killing. Why does it happen so often? And then they say things like that. So let's discuss race communism. There are several different ways communists attempt to destroy a society. Several different communist branches in America, as we've noted several times before, they all want the same thing. They all have the same goal, the destruction of the country. They just have different branding. You know, there's the feminism, there's the LGBTQ demon mob stuff, there's, and of course, climate, but race communism. Why is that so successful? Well, here's the truth of it. Race communism is the easiest one to sell. The easiest one to sell. It always has been. American race communism, don't think for a moment it's unique. Mao used this extensively. They used it in the Soviet Union. This is all the way back. Every communist revolution, they understand how easy the sell is. Hey, you, everyone who looks like you, you've been oppressed. By who? By them. And if you give me power, I will hurt them for you. It's an easy sell. And angry people, bitter people, stupid people, they gobble it up oftentimes and they march forward. Here in the United States of America, don't ever forget this, the Soviet Union, back when it existed, they infiltrated the civil rights movement in the United States of America because they recognized exactly what I just said, that they had an opportunity to tear this country apart from the inside, infiltrate that movement, take it from wanting equal rights for everybody, turn it into some white grievance movement where, you know, you gotta go kill whitey, and then it can go a long way to breaking up the United States of America. That was done to us, and it was done to us on purpose. It wasn't an accident. Now, fast forward to where we are today, because it's gotten to a terrible, terrible place. Why does this happen over and over and over and over again? That story out of Charlotte is one story of so many. It happens because Democrats or communists who push this stuff all the time, all the time. From Joe Biden standing in front of a room full of black people telling them Republicans want to put them back in chains, from the American media doing everything they can to cover for a black criminal whenever a black criminal commits a crime, and the endless browbeating that white people are evil, white people are evil, black people are oppressed, white people are evil. Maybe that doesn't have an effect on you, no matter your skin color, whether you're white or black, but you should know there is a violent black underclass, courtesy of the broken up black family, and when they hear those things, they act. And that's why this continues to happen over and over and over and over again. The media will coddle them, the Democrats will encourage them, and they will march out and they will murder some more. And now, let's move on past Democrats for just a moment, because we got to where we are now with this crime rampant, the get out of jail free card for every minority in the country. We got to where we are now in large part because of the George Floyd riots and protests. They were always working on this, as we just mentioned, clear back to the civil rights era. But once George Floyd died, American communists recognized it for what it was, a bad-looking video that created a wonderful opportunity for them to destroy police departments and set violent criminals free so they can go hurt people. They recognized the opportunity immediately. And I, and you, I'm sure you were there too, I recognized it immediately for what it was. The day George Floyd died, and I started to see what was happening in the media, in politics, it was very obvious that this was turning into a communist operation to destroy the United States of America. I recognized it. You recognized it. But the GOP did not. We elect these people in part, in large part, because we want them to be a shield for us against the communism. But I want to remind you, we are where we are today because of the George Floyd protests. And when the George Floyd riots, when the cops are racist, when that narrative was being cemented into the minds of Americans across the country, the GOP participated.
Communities of color and people like myself, I've told my story several times, stopped 7 times in 1 year. That has been said a lot, but I was stopped this year driving while black when I got a warning ticket for failing to use my turn signal earlier in my lane change. And so this issue continues, and that's why it's so important for us to say that we hear you. We're listening to your concerns. The George Floyd incident certainly accelerated this conversation, and we find ourselves at a place with a package that I think speaks to the families that I spoke with yesterday who lost loved ones. We hear you. I think this package speaks very clearly to the young person who's concerned when he's stopped by the law enforcement officers. We see you.
The GOP, when the communist fires were raging, the GOP did not grab a water hose, they grabbed a gas can. John Cornyn, James Lankford, United States senators from red states standing right beside Tim Scott, pushing that evil, dishonest filth. Let us remember what the GOP's role was in bringing us to where we are today. Now, the good news is, we are starting to see some positive changes. Caroline Leavitt in the White House talked about that horrible murder.
Enough is enough, and that is why President Trump is doing everything in his power by taking action to undo these absurd policies. The president recently signed a powerful executive order directing the AG to submit a list of states and local jurisdictions with cashless bail policies so that the Trump administration may identify federal funds that are being provided to these states and can potentially be suspended or terminated. President Trump firmly believes that to maintain order and public safety, we must incarcerate individuals whose pending criminal charges or criminal history demonstrate a clear ongoing risk to civil society. This is a common sense and sensible approach that the vast majority of Americans agree with, and it's time for the Democrat Party to get on board with what is right. Democrats in North Carolina and nationwide are consumed with pushing a woke, soft-on-crime agenda, no matter how many innocent Americans suffer as a result.
Okay. A lot of that was awesome. Credit to her, credit to the Trump administration. But if I may, it's not soft on crime. Stop saying that. are not soft on crime, not even a little bit soft on crime. They are not naive. They're not misguided. They intentionally put the most violent people in our society back into society because they want people murdered and raped and robbed. It is not soft on crime. Stop giving them that benefit. They have not earned it. They want people murdered because it destabilizes society. Every single communist revolution has done the exact same thing, set the criminals free, then put into place a legal system that ensures the criminals stay free during the revolution phase. Stop saying soft on crime. Look at this CNN panel, and I want you to understand something. As you watch this, I want you to understand every one of these dirty communists, they want your daughter raped.
He did actually serve time for the violent offenses that he committed.
But he was a career criminal, a repeat offender who was let back onto our streets despite a really bad criminal record that suggests he should have been locked away for life because he was threatening the public. He was a menace to society.
He should have been locked away for life for what now?
He should have schizophrenia.
You want him
You actually said that. I can't believe you actually said that somebody should be locked away in jail forever for schizophrenia. Did you really say that?
Isolated.
Did you really say that?
In an institution.
Is this actually
institutionalized? What you're saying is that this man should have been roaming the streets.
I'm saying that,
is that
you don't
position?
Lock people in prison for schizophrenia.
And he demonstrated violent proclivities repeatedly.
You said he should be locked away for life for schizophrenia. That is what you said.
He should be institutionalized. Yes. And if you're saying he should not, you're saying that young women like you and me are basically just we are lambs into the slaughter. You go on public transportation in this city, that could happen to any single one of us.
I use public transit constantly. That is completely unhinged, frankly. People shouldn't be locked away for mental illness. They should be treated for it.
That young lady, she uses public transit. Anyone who lives in a big city now and uses public transit sees violent, dangerous people almost every single day, and she does too. But she is so committed in her heart to destroying this country that even if it means her own harm, she still wants the animals turned loose on you, your family, on your street, your wife, your son, your daughter, your husband. We are not dealing with soft on crime. And please, God, get it through your head. We are not dealing with naivete. They want the animals loose because they want them to hurt you. This helps their revolution. Did you hear this story out of New York? This endless kill whitey rhetoric, black people are oppressed rhetoric, gives you things like this.
The NYPD is searching for the suspect in a horrific double homicide, robbery, and arson. Here is what we know so far. Video obtained from the Belrose neighborhood of Queens on Monday at approximately 10 a.m. shows the suspect approach a home and speak to an occupant. Witnesses state that the suspect claimed that he needed assistance, that his phone battery was dead, and he was asking if he could enter the house to charge his phone. At this first house, the suspect is denied entry. He then proceeds on foot to a second house, the incident location at that house. Video shows the suspect interacting with the male victim, and it appears the suspect was allowed into the backyard. At approximately 10:18 a.m., the suspect and male victim are seen entering the rear door of the residence. The suspect is next seen on video exiting the house 5 hours later, about 14 minutes after the suspect was seen on video leaving the residence at around 3:22 p.m. The fire department responded to the location after being notified of a fire there by a member of the victim's family. Once the flames were under control, two victims were found deceased inside the home. Mr. Alton was found in the basement, tied to a pole, with multiple stab wounds. Mrs. Alton was found on the first floor, severely burned. McGriff has a lengthy, violent criminal history stretching back 30 years, including multiple robberies. He is currently out on parole.
Democrats set that animal loose on purpose. Remember that and plan accordingly. all that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We'll talk to Liz Wheeler about this in a moment. Before we talk to Liz Wheeler, switch your cell phone service. The George Floyd protests we just brought up, they had corporate sponsorship. And if you have Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile, I would highly suggest you go look up what they were doing while the animals were turning our cities into a nightmare. My cell phone company, Pure Talk, they didn't sponsor it. They would never. When Pure Talk gives back, they give back to veterans. Pure Talk's CEO fought for this country in Vietnam, two tours with Mac V. Sog. That's my company. You want to switch? Save money. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
What is the brokenness of the nuclear family, the brokenness of the black family, the fact that black fathers are absent,
young black men turn to drugs and gangs? You're not going to sit up here and talk about the brokenness of the black family. How dare you?
And by the way,
well, the family, I think the family in general you can point to. I don't know that one race over the other works.
This is also true for the murderer who killed the two young children, a white man.
Man, must have touched a nerve with that one. Joining me now, the lady who touched that nerve, Liz Wheeler of the great Liz Wheeler Show. Hey, Liz, what in the world got her hackles so far up? I mean, the numbers are the numbers.
Yeah, I was surprised that she would be so triggered by something Barack Obama said a decade ago. But, you know, you can't always predict with these socialists what exactly is going to get them going. I think that's probably it. I did not know who she was before I debated her. I looked her up afterwards, and it turns out that she's not just a Democrat, a former Democrat state rep. She identifies as a Democrat socialist. So think about this for a second. If you were to make the statement that, oh, it's good for children, it's good for adults, it's good for communities, it's good for society, it's good for our country, if marriages are intact, it would be great if we encouraged and incentivized black families to remain intact. Think about what that would entail. Think about the implications of that statement. That would require us to promote marriage between one man and one woman versus this redefinition of marriage to include same-sex couples. It would require us to acknowledge the objective truth that a man is a man and can't be a woman, and a woman is a woman and can't be a man. It would require us to actually be happy when children are created instead of portraying children as a burden and terrible. And it would also require just this general idea that government is not your parent, that government's role is not to be in charge of you or take care of you, that primarily falls on the nuclear family as created by God. All of these things, Jesse, are the antithesis of the socialist ideology that she espouses. So yeah, what I said, Barack Obama beat me to it by about a decade, and he said it honestly more beautifully than I did. But the reason she's so triggered is because socialists need to destroy the nuclear family. They can't bear the thought of actually trying to fix the brokenness that black families are experiencing today.
Why, Liz? Why is it that they would destroy something as wonderful as the nuclear family? Two parents, a man and a woman, by the way. Two parents, kiddos. Why would you ever want to destroy something like that?
Well, if you look to Antonio Gramsci, the Italian Marxist, he was the one who wrote and said, listen, when Marxist revolutions are successful, it's not because of economic discontent. It's not because the working class revolts against the ruling class. When Marxist revolutions are successful, they're successful because first the civil institutions in a country, that's the media, the education system, the law, religion, and the nuclear family are first destroyed. And once those civil institutions are destroyed, because that's what people rely on, then a free government can be toppled and Marxism can be imposed on the people. What we're seeing in our country, I wrote about this in my book, Hide Your Children, Exposing the Marxists Behind the Attack on America's Kids. What we're seeing in our nation is this deliberate, relentless attack on the nuclear family for the express purpose of destroying it as a civil institution. That's why we see the Black Lives Matter movement doing the same thing with the law, the restorative justice policies that allowed the murder of Irina Zarutska in Charlotte, North Carolina. That's an attack on the civil institution of the law. We see it on the education system, critical race theory, and transing our kids in public school classrooms. What? We see the wokeness that's infiltrated and pervades especially evangelical churches in our country. We see this in all of the institutions that Gramsci identified as the institutions that need to be destroyed before a free government can be toppled and Marxism can be imposed on people.
Liz, the right, much of the right, not all of it, not at all. We are waking up slowly but surely, but so many people, especially normal people, struggle with realizing, acknowledging that the destruction is intentional. You know, they get soft on crime as if that's their policy. They're just too nice, Liz. That people don't understand. They want people murdered. They want people raped. That's how you destabilize and break up a society. It's not a whoopsie, an animal stabs some woman to death. That's what they want.
Yeah, if we don't acknowledge the reality of the political enemy that we face, then we won't be able to defeat it. But that's one of the things that actually has changed in the last 5 to 10 years. This is, I mean, you could call it the red pilling of the right if you want. A lot of people have had their eyes open to the reality of what we're facing, whether they saw the Black Lives Matter riots of 2020, you know, these mad Marxist riots in the name of racial justice, which sounds good. We all support racial justice, but really they were about the destruction of private property and the destabilization of our criminal justice system. People didn't like that. They were incredibly red-pilled to see Democrat politicians supporting arson and robbery and theft and assault of police officers. And then you had COVID, which opened people's eyes to the fact that the experts lie and manipulate and harm you for their own profit and power. You see this incredible pushback against the technocracy that has gripped us for the past generations. And I actually find it incredibly encouraging. It's why I think there's also this spiritual renewal that's happening in our country, why so many young men are becoming conservative, why so many young men are becoming Catholic, because they realize actually what we're facing in our country is not Republicans bickering with Democrats. We are in a spiritual battle of good versus evil. And when you recognize that, then you begin to explore, okay, well, if what we're facing, this discrimination against men, vilifying men for being, for having testosterone, telling them that they're toxic, that they're inherently rapists if they're not indoctrinated out of it, deprived due process when they're faced false accusations by, you know, crazy women. When you face that, you realize that's not just soft on crime. That's evil. And if there's evil, there must be good. And so the younger generation specifically, as much as we like to criticize them, they're actually exploring what is good. And they're finding, of course, the author of that, of all things good. And that's a positive thing, but it does sometimes first require you to have that jarring moment of acknowledging, wow, what we're facing is actually deliberate destruction of everything that we know and love.
Liz, how do we tackle this when they're not sorry? I mean, that judge who turned that animal loose is not sorry. Democrats are not sorry. Democrat politicians, judges, media people, they're not sorry for what they believe. They're not asking for forgiveness. They have not shed a single tear, nor will they. It's going according to plan. How do we defeat that?
By prioritizing justice over misplaced compassion. It's funny actually that you mentioned compassion before, like, oh, soft on crime, they're just a little bit too sympathetic to criminals. That's what some Republicans think about Democrats, when the reality, of course, is that Democrats are doing this on purpose. The party that actually suffers from misplaced compassion is the Republican Party. The Republican Party extends too much benefit of the doubt to our opposition because we want to love humanity. We do love humanity. We know there's good in every person and we want to draw that out of people. We don't want to, you know, write them off. We don't want to consign them to a life of misery because they once held a bad opinion. The Republican Party, though, while that's a fine attitude to have maybe in your personal life or in your spiritual life, when it comes to the application of government, our highest moral value is justice. And justice does not allow injustice. Justice does not allow racial equity and criminal justice task forces to allow criminals who happen to have black skin be let off 14 times because he happens to have black skin, at the detriment, of course, of the poor woman who was left to bleed out on the train after she was stabbed in the throat 3 times.
Oof. So freaking sad. Liz, appreciate you. Come back soon. Jeffrey Tucker is going to talk to us about the Federal Reserve. I promise you, you're about to get smarter. I'm about to get smarter, and Lord knows I need all the help I can get. Before we talk to Jeffrey, how do you feel at the end of the day? How's your energy? when you get home from work, are you done, plop down in the couch, and you just out of gas, counting the seconds till bed? Or do you feel good? I feel good. And I want you to feel good, and I want you to know that Chalk makes that possible. I've never taken anything in my life for a very long time. It's just not something I do. I've taken a male vitality stack from Chalk every single day for over 3 years. It has changed how I work. It has changed how I live in my personal life. My mind works so much better. I have so much more energy. My mood is so much better. My kids comment on it. You want to get your T levels jacked through the roof naturally? Ladies, they have a female vitality stack for you. There's a male vitality stack for men. Go get a Chalk subscription. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Who is Lisa Cook? Why do we keep hearing this name? Why does Donald Trump want her gone? What's happening out there? We're going to talk about that and so much more with the great Jeffrey A. Tucker, president of the Brownstone Institute. Wrote a book called Spirits of America. I would highly, highly recommend it. Jeffrey, what's with this Lisa Cook business?
Well, she has no qualifications to be on a federal on the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve. It's absurd. She's not even really a theoretical economist, much less a monetary banking economist. She has done, you know, a handful of papers on economic history. It's not real. Obviously, she's put in there for reasons unrelated to her competence. But what Trump's up to here is something really quite ingenious. He would like to get some clarity on exactly the extent to which and whether and to what extent the voters' representatives have any power over the Federal Reserve at all, any kind of stake in the monetary system, any ability to control the central bank, which has been founded in 1913 supposedly as an independent agency. But there's no such thing in the U.S. Constitution as an independent agency. It doesn't give three branches of government and then have like a footnote, oh, also independent agencies. That's not there. It's very clear from the Constitution that Congress is supposed to be in charge of money and finance, even coining money. And so Congress punted that over to this thing they called the Federal Reserve. Mostly it was called that for marketing reasons. And nobody's known what to do about it ever since, except that it's this beast lording it over, you know, the entire planet Earth with the power to print the world's most powerful currency unto infinity. So Trump has decided that he wanted to do something about this and test what is the constitutionality of this structure. In many ways, it's a dream of all of us for our entire lives, and the dream of many people really for 110 years. So it's all happening now, and he decided to use the implementation clause that Congress wrote concerning the Fed, saying that the president can remove a member of the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve for a cause. That's the words it used, for cause. What turned out, Lisa Cook is apparently, from all the evidence we can find, unless there's something I've not seen, guilty of a federal crime of mortgage fraud. She listed two separate primary residencies on her mortgage applications in order to get a favorable rate of interest. Yeah, that's special. And then also favorable tax treatment, as anybody involved in buying and selling homes knows that you can only have one primary residence. She has two. So that's a problem. And she should have never been appointed, not just because of this reason, but because just on the merits, she shouldn't have ever been there in the first place. It's like some sort of weird joke. So Trump said, all right, you're gone. All right, seemed like good cause. And now it's hit the courts already, and it's going to be decided probably eventually by the Supreme Court. And I have to think that if they're reading the Constitution, they care what it says, that they're going to issue a decision here that is going to be really impactful and change the course of American monetary and financial history.
Okay, so help me understand why it would change so much. Aren't they just deciding you can fire Lisa Cook or not? Is it beyond that?
Yeah, well, it has to do with who's in charge of the central bank, who's in charge of the Federal Reserve. I mean, right now, there's just kind of this floating abstractions out there. The president gets to appoint a new Federal Reserve governor, but his tenure, you know, it's awkward because it doesn't dovetail with the presidency either. So there's been a long-running assumption that the Fed it really can do whatever it wants and nobody can control it. Most presidents have been afraid to fuss with the Fed because they're afraid there'll be some weird revolt in the financial markets, the bankers are going to get upset, the bond markets are going to freak out. So everybody's kind of left it alone, except to the extent that they could sometimes nudge the central bank to lower rates to give them a more favorable rate of growth or something like that. But for the most part, it's been this sort of untouchable, holy institution. Trump doesn't really see it that way. And so if he manages to be able to just fire one of these people for cause, now you've got a new sort of cudgel or a direct sort of way that the people's representatives can actually impact the function and control of the Federal Reserve. I mean, what's next? You know, external audits? You know, that could be very interesting. So it's really important. Now, already we've seen one court decision come out about this. They said, no, you cannot fire her because that would interfere with the independence of the Fed. So you see what's going on here. There's a great desire to protect the independence of this Fed. Now, one thing I do want to point out is that since Trump became president, he's been testing the constitutionality of the administrative state at every step. Whether it's going after the State Department, the USAID, Department of Education, engaged in mass firings at this agency, at that agency, withholding the funds, defunding things, firing agency heads all over the place. And each one of these things has been reversed by a federal district court, you know, enjoining, no, you can't do that. You're a president, and the president has to totally be submissive to the administrative state. And each time these went to the Supreme Court has issued an opinion saying, no, that department exists under the executive branch, and Article 2, Section 1 says the U.S. president is the head of the executive branch. So therefore, the president or the president's representatives can exercise some discretionary power over the personnel, funding, and structure of executive branch agencies. Now, so far that's been fine. It's, you know, affected the State Department, Department of Labor, Department of Energy, Department of Agriculture, whatever. These are the civilian branches. But there's this other thing called the Federal Reserve. Well, where does it exist in the org chart of the government? Well, you can pull it up and see. It exists right underneath, you guessed it, the executive branch. Congress punted. It turned over banking powers and the power of coinage to the executive branch. That's where it did. That's where it exists. There's no such thing as an independent agency that doesn't live in one of the buckets. The Federal Reserve lives in the bucket of the executive branch. So this is hugely important to understand. And if Trump manages to get a judgment from the Supreme Court saying the obvious, then everything could change about the Federal Reserve and America's monetary policy.
Jeffrey, let's shift gears here a little bit and talk about tariffs. They've been on everyone's mind. Trump's a big believer in them. The Supreme Court is apparently going to dig into this now. What's the reality? Are they working? Are they not working? What's the Supreme Court going to say? Dump it on us.
Yeah, this is a good transition because we've already talked about where these powers belong in the three branches of government. With the tariff power, the Constitution similarly put that with Congress. They said Congress should have this power over this. And that was for a deliberate reason, because they didn't want the president to engage in tariff policies that would be partisan based on this region's international interests and economic interests versus that one. Now, back in those days, the northern parts of the country were obviously inclined more towards its banking industry and these sort of things. The southern states, with slavery and agriculture as the root of their economic life, was completely different. The northern states was inclined more towards protectionism, and the South more inclined towards cultivating export markets for its product. So the tariffs are in many ways might have been beneficial to the North, but not beneficial to the South. So the power was left with Congress. Now, and that's pretty much the way it stayed for most of the U.S. history until the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, until after the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, Congress kind of messed up at the beginning of the Great Depression and passed huge tariffs, which everybody at the time, at least after a few years, began to blame the tariffs for the depths of the Depression. So gradually, between 1934 and then 1946, the power to control trade was transferred by Congress over to the president. And then we had the offices of the U.S. Trade Representative, and all these powers belong to the president. So by the time Trump comes along, he's a strong believer in tariffs, obviously, he's made very clear, and has never seen much of a rationale for outsourcing jobs or relying primarily on imports when you could make it at home, these kinds of things. This is his outlook. And so he used his power over trade to implement all these policies. Well, in so doing, he also shattered 70 years of precedent, and you could say progress towards a low tariff globalized world. He just absolutely ratcheted it back the other way in this shocking way, and nobody could stop him. So what's to observe about that? I mean, I will say this, he's using powers that are not granted him in the Constitution. They're granted him by legislation from Congress. So what does the Supreme Court say about that? You know, I could see it going either way at this point. Congress did transfer the power. The question is, can they transfer that power? I mean, are they constitutionally allowed to transfer to another branch that which the Constitution specifically assigns to them? I could see the Supreme Court saying, no, they can't do that. And so therefore, Trump does not have these powers that he claims to have over tariffs, and therefore they belong with Congress. And, you know, so that's a solution I would prefer. One thing is that I think we've learned over time, I mean, I've learned this over time, it's usually best not to second guess the wisdom of the founders. I mean, maybe they were wrong about this point at that point, but generally speaking, there was a wisdom in what they did that sometimes one generation or one political moment, it's not obvious what that is, but as time goes on, you begin to see it. I think this is true in the case of coinage with Congress and in the case with tariffs with Congress. I think in the end, this will be a good decision. What that would lead to, it's not some calamity that Trump's predicting. I think he's really being hyperbolic about this. What it would lead to is that the Republican-dominated Congress would then have to pass legislation that concerns tariffs and come up with something that was a little bit more comprehensible than this arbitrary stuff that's going on now. Now, Trump would say, well, that's a terrible idea. That totally takes away all my powers to make deals. And that's true, it's kind of been impressive the way he's used the tariff power for deal making, but that also, again, that's exactly what the U.S. Constitution did not want the president doing, is making deals with everybody. They wanted one single rule for the world, and they thought that Congress was the best institution to make that happen.
How badly did the Biden administration lie about, well, I mean, everything under the sun, but about the jobs in the final year when they were running this jobs revision? I mean, revising down a million jobs is not, that's not a small thing.
It's unbelievable. I was realizing something. And to tell you the truth, I've known this for 4 years. Something, an astounding fact that for the first time in modern life, and I'm going to say since maybe the 1880s, something like that, we as a country and a society as observers have really no clue where we are in the business cycle. This is weird because, you know, ever since we've had a record, we've known, oh, this is a recovery, this is a recession. And we do this based on jobs data, inflation data, GDP data, all these other things. But ever since the lockdowns happened, everything has been crazy, and a lot of it has just been made up. I watch this unfold. More and more data that was coming out from the federal government during the Biden years, I would just look at it and go, that's fake. That's not real. You made that up. That's inconsistent with what we're seeing from private sector sources. I've known for 4 years this stuff is all nonsense. Well, Trump's trying to clean up the mess now, and he's got some new good people coming to the BLS and so on. But meanwhile, the truth is starting to come out. So this new jobs revision is easily the biggest in history. It's like, well, we thought there were 1 million jobs. Whoops, they're gone. Okay, so, I mean, the amazing thing about that is that while these great new job creation was promoted all of last year in anticipation of the election, by the way, capital markets were responding to that, the stock markets were responding to that, voters were responding to that. They might feel a certain job insecurity, know people that are out of job or know people that are working 5 jobs, whatever, but they had a sense, well, the national media says there's massive job creation all over the place. The scientists say that. So surely there is. I got to fix my curtain here, sorry. So surely that is really happening. They wouldn't lie to me about that, right? But of course they were lying the entire time. So none of it was true. I mean, the election would have been much worse for Kamala than it even was if the truth about the jobs numbers had actually come out last year, but they didn't come out. It was all vaporware. It was all of a fable. They were telling economic fables for not just last year, but the previous 3 years too.
Jeffrey, before I let you go, tell me about, well, I already know about it, but tell everybody about Spirits of America.
Oh, thank you. Well, I have to say, you know, I've written 20 books. This is, so far, easily my favorite. It's the only one that I keep picking up and reading, which is funny. I've heard of other authors doing this. They write a book and they keep picking it up and rereading it. I used to think, well, that's pretty self-indulgent. And I never did that. Mm. Well, it turns out the reason I didn't do that is because I didn't really like the other books I wrote that much, not as much as this one. I'm really nuts for this one. This is my sort of post-lockdown private reflection on the meaning of the physical world and the mores and values that built American prosperity and family life and community life, that we, during the lockdown period and after, we tended to completely forget because we were tempted by this delusions of a utopian world born of digital big tech companies and that sort of thing. This is a book about the actual values and the practices and the habits that really made this country prosperous. And I argue that we need to be rallying around those. It's got 15 short chapters, and I commissioned 15 beautiful pen and ink drawings to give it a sort of a feeling of nostalgia about it. But I'm very proud of the work, and I'm very happy that it's being reviewed well and selling well. It's just a one evening read, but I'm very happy with it. Thank you for asking.
Of course. I would highly recommend everybody go pick it up. I think you'll really enjoy it. Jeffrey, my friend, thank you as always. Wonderful. Appreciate you. Let's do Light in the Mood. Next. All right, let's lighten the mood. Before we lighten the mood here, I want to let you know, I want to remind you that my buddy Mike Slater does a wonderful, wonderful podcast, Politics by Faith. If you're trying to understand what you're seeing, a biblical view of the things you're seeing, how to digest things, recommend it. Give it a shot, Politics by Faith. It's very, very, very good. We just talked to Jeffrey Tucker. Mike Slater talked to him for longer than that. It was fascinating. Highly recommend it. Now, for lighten the mood. Maybe you won't think this is lightening your mood or my mood but it does lighten my mood a great deal. Texas A&M student gets confronted by filthy LGBTQ demonic crap in class. Not having any of it.
Just kind of a recap of our full marks on gender and sexuality we bring from last class. What did we do get to in our last class?
I just have a question because I'm not entirely sure this is legal to be teaching. Because according to our president, there's only two genders, and he said that he would be freezing agencies' funding programs that promote gender ideology. And this also very much goes against not only myself, but a lot of people's religious beliefs. And so I am not going to participate in this.
You are under this misconception that when I say this,
Gender is illegal.
If you are uncomfortable in this class, you do have the right to leave.
Yes.
What we are doing is not illegal. I'm not convinced that your proposal will be effective in stopping me from teaching things that are biologically true, because I do have the legal and ethical authority, rules and professional expertise in this classroom.
Okay. Yeah, no, I am.
That's guts. Kids are going to be all right. They're waking up. They're tired of this crap. No more being afraid. They're speaking up. That takes guts right there. That's courageous. Bravo to that young lady. Lightens my mood. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
About something about a comedic tone.
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty on demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.